There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
Maui Nui is on a mission to help balance axis deer populations for the good of our environment, communities, and food systems. On the island of Maui, they've shared over 126,000 pounds of nutrient-dense protein with the Maui community. Secure your spot now. Become a snack subscriber and join in helping to build more resilient food and ecosystems on Maui. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com. That's MauiNuiVenison.com. And use promo code BEAR for 20% off your first order.
I'm sure a lot of you guys remember the old ceremonial hunting tradition of eating the heart out of the first animal you kill. Meat from those organs are among the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet. You can get those same benefits your ancestors craved via convenient daily capsules from Heart and Soil. Find out more at heartandsoil.co. And remember, use code MEATEATER for 10% off your purchase.
My name is Clay Newcomb, and this is a production of the Bear Grease Podcast called the Bear Grease Render, where we render down, dive deeper, and look behind the scenes of the actual Bear Grease Podcast. Presented by FHF Gear, American-made, purpose-built hunting and fishing gear that's designed to be as rugged as the places we explore.
We need to get some mustache wax as part of the render.
Wait, for Dan?
Daniel Roop can keep his mustache on the microphone.
Okay,
I was going to say, we put
my bear grease mustache wax is fresh out. I had some right there.
Oh, that would be spectacular.
So, yeah, too bad.
For those of us that have mustaches.
Some of Brent's
Misty, you should grow a mustache. I hope I don't.
You should grow a mustache. You look great.
We should get Misty a fake mustache
to wear during the render.
Just so you don't feel so out of place.
I don't feel like an outsider.
Yeah, that would be really good. You could wear one of those turkey beards.
Well, there you go. I feel good. I feel pretty confident.
Let's get the fake mustache.
2022, Misty gets a mustache.
Yes, I'm good. For sure.
Actually, not
my personal goal. Welcome to the Bear Grease Render. Fantastic to see everybody here today.
It's really good to be seen.
It is 2022.
It is.
Okay, envision yourself in 1999, okay? And think about talking about 2022.
We were preparing for Y2K.
Yeah, the world
was about to end. Had my water purifier. I'd stoke
a couple
up,
cases stacked, of shotgun shells.
Exactly.
Are you kidding? Yeah. Is that you?
No,
really,
I'm dead serious.
Were, okay.
Yeah.
I'm still ready for Y2K.
Okay. Entire container full of pinto beans.
Oh my God.
Well, my mom.
Wait a minute. Whoa, stop.
Hold on. My mom got a pound.
No, you
got
to stop.
Oh no.
You got a container full of what?
Pinto beans.
Pinto.
No,
pinto.
Pinto.
Say it again.
Pinto.
You
beans.
Might as well be saying acorn.
I do say acorn sometimes.
There you go.
Get out.
I admit that my family has a dicey Yankees background.
He really does.
My family's all Yankees.
I don't want to know. Oh.
Okay, back to my original question here. You guys kind of took it and ran.
I didn't even hear a question.
I think it was like Clay's introductory comment.
What I was trying to get at was, okay, if you're going from 2021 to 2022, it doesn't sound like that big of a leap.
No.
Okay, but imagine I wrote 2022 today for the first time. Wrote it on a piece of paper for whatever, you know, date and something.
I'm imagining it.
I can't keep up with what we're talking about. I'll show you what I did. Look, in that little note right there, I put one 22.
Okay.
And I thought, golly, can you imagine in the 1990s, you know, I would have been a teenager thinking about 2022. Okay, stop that thought and now think about 2045.
Lord have mercy. I don't have
to. Do you see my point?
Yeah.
It's crazy. I don't know. The Brent will be alive.
I'll be dead.
Brent's hoping for next week.
Yeah. I'm looking for the end of this render.
Point being, time seems to be continuing to progress.
Yes.
So, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Well, that was,
I don't know what waters. Kind of a...
Where is this a question?
Intro that
this
was.
This was one of Clay's questions
that we don't get to answer. He actually answers for us.
Foreshadowing.
It feels a little bit like, do y'all remember Deep Thoughts with Jack Handy?
Yeah. Oh,
it feels a little bit, a little bit Jack Handy-ish.
Except not funny.
Well,
I'm not sure the Onyx guys and Rusty Johnson would have given me this much flack.
They definitely would not.
Oh, so now you're being They're critical of
That's because
the...
they only spent a week with you. We've known you since 1999. We're still dealing with the fallout.
I think I met you in 1990. Would have been 1998.
No, it was 99.
1999.
Yep.
23 years ago.
The longest 23 years.
You could have killed somebody and got out of prison by now.
I know.
And
I
be
know.
Done with it.
Well,
wow.
I said all that to say Happy New Year. We have one mystery guest with us. Oh. Hey, if you really followed Bear Grease, you could probably guess who it is. You could guess who it is.
Because you could see the patterns. The patterns.
Yeah, yeah you could see the pattern. Goes. The pattern, and here's the pattern, and you can guess, be thinking, if you listen to the last podcast, which you should have, the Folsom Part 4, the Unsolved Mystery of Fluted Stone, there would have been a guest on there that's here today. I'll introduce him here in just a minute, as is our custom. But to my left, Dr. Daniel Roop, great to see you.
Happy to be here.
Really, you considered shaving your beard after you saw mine.
Well, your mustache does look really good.
That's the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
I know, and I really hate to say it. I'm begrudgingly said it looks good, a little too good.
Okay, to your left is our mystery guest who will come back to. To his left, Josh Lambridge, Spillmaker.
Hello, Happy New Year.
Great to see you.
My biggest desire, my thing to see this year is the render when we all get together and that chair just breaks on Daniel.
Oh, it's coming, man.
It's like hanging by a thread.
You are risking your life shimmying it. Yeah.
That's going to be good. To your left, back from wherever he came from, Brent Reeves.
Hello.
Great to see you, Brent.
It's good to be seen.
Everybody heard Brent's holiday greeting.
We appreciated that.
I thought it was great.
It was almost like you're right in the room.
Oh, I hate to miss that more than anything. And the cookies. I don't guess nobody saved any.
We all got one.
Yep, we got one and then no more.
Yep.
We did leave an empty chair for you last time.
That was good.
Mm-hmm.
I took a picture of it.
that was good. We've been traveling, man, for the holidays and all that. Been to Texas and meeting folks, meeting Render. People, fans of the Render down there. David McDaniels, good guy. I think a lot of us talked to him here. Absolute wonderful guy. Good family guy.
Nice.
Had a cup of coffee with him. I bought it, so the next one's on him.
Oh, wow. You can send me the bill.
Can you imagine me buying coffee?
That means when I go through Texas, he's buying me coffee.
Correct.
That's how it works. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Brent, you been coon hunting a lot?
I've been coon hunting a lot. I went last night, man. It's like 25 degrees.
Whew.
Michael Roseman, Sunspot Lights, calls me. He says, hey, you going hunting tonight to prove my theory? And I said, I'm going hunting tonight to tree a coon. He said, well, my theory is that they don't, and I don't think it's a theory. He said, it gets like 28 degrees. Coons don't move. They do move.
Mm-hmm. Is that the threshold, 28 degrees?
What they do is they move around in the den tree when your dog tree's on them, but they ain't coming out. So
there would be a different temperature regimen for different parts of the world. Because there's parts of the coon range where 28 degrees, if they didn't move below 28, they would never move.
Yeah.
But down where Brent's
where
at,
I'm at,
which is further south than even here, that's pretty darn cold.
Yeah.
And it does matter to the recent weather patterns. Mm-hmm. So we've had this super warm December, and then it got super duper cold. And that's what I remember when I first started coon hunting in high school, Jeff Cunningham, who got us, me and my other buddy, coon hunting. We wanted to go coon hunting on a real cold night, and he was like, Clay, these are the nights that those coons eat all year round so they don't have to leave the den.
Right.
And we didn't believe him, and we went coon hunting, and we rarely treated anything when it was super cold for the region.
My thing was I just enjoy. I fixed me a thermos of coffee. I loaded the dog up, and we hit the woods, and I sat out there in the dark.
There is something great about hunting when it's cold.
And it's clear, man. Yes. You could hear forever.
Yeah.
And when he did strike and open up in tree, he was probably 360 yards away, I think. I looked on my tracker. Man, it sounded like he was just right there. So
yeah.
It sounded good.
Oh, you know, sound does travel different on a cold night.
Oh, yeah.
It's crisper, clearer. Good. Well, man, good time. We got to go coon hunting. Me and Brent got to go coon hunting. To Brent's left, my boss and scheduling manager, who I would like to request a coon hunt with Brent for, my wife, Misty Newcomb.
Nice to be here. I definitely don't want that job. I quit.
I want you to have.
I don't want to be the scheduling
manager.
You mean
I get to manage my
own
schedule? No,
I get to be the boss, but yeah.
You're not quitting as boss?
I'm good with that one. I don't want the scheduling manager. That'd be kind of stressful.
Hey, Misty went squirrel hunting with me the other day.
It's a true story. Yeah, I would like to. Can I speak freely?
Sure. You're the boss.
Sure, you're the only one without a mustache.
Listen, you guys, I haven't shot a big old shotgun like that a whole lot since I was a little girl. I remember having a good shot. Brent will remember from bear camp when you and Isaac were trying to teach me that I have a left eye dominance.
Oh, yeah. You're crazy in the head.
And crazy in the head. Whatever.
No mustache and left eye dominance. Uh-huh. Which kind of woman is this?
I know. So I'll just be honest. I'm not a great shot. I haven't shot a lot of squirrels. Like, ever. Mm. So Clay tells me, hey, come with me and we're going to have a lot of fun. And he, you know, when he takes the boys, he gets them candy, like some of our kids.
Did he buy you candy? That's
no.
Nice.
First off, no, I was expecting candy and I got
like
none.
I feel like I'm being sideswiped.
Well, you said I could speak freely. Second.
I would have bought you candy.
Second, hold off. You
know what?
He actually did
volunteer.
You should
know that she wants candy.
But I don't want to say I want candy.
Exactly, Clay.
I'm sorry, Daniel.
Well, this turned bad.
Oh, Daniel, an apology.
Listen, you too. So then we go and we shoot. I can't even remember. I just remember that Clay started mocking me. Huh. Like, actually mocking me. And
my hand is over my mouth.
He's holding his tongue.
Not just mocking me while shooting, but afterwards when we would be around other, like, expert shooters, he would start mocking my
because
proficiency.
You missed,
I mean, just I would walk up and I didn't know what was happening, but there was lots of giggling and it had to do with me and it had to do with that gun. And I told Clay, this is the worst. What is it? R3? Is that what they call it?
Hunter recruitment. Yeah.
Yeah, this is the worst hunter recruitment strategy I have ever seen in my life. Mm. It's not like I woke up that morning and thought, gosh, I really love squirrel hunting. No, I did not.
Here's the question, though, Missy. Did you enjoy it?
I did. I had a great time.
Okay, she said all that. We had a fantastic time.
Wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to go ahead and as the host
time.
Of this show, I'm going to go ahead and say that I did not mock her.
He giggled. Okay.
I did giggle just a little bit.
Okay,
because
let's acknowledge it. Clay just
the first squirrel that we shot at.
No, stop. This is terrible. This is horrible hunter recruitment. If people feel like if they go hunting with you, you're going to mock them.
I was just trying to help you hit the squirrel.
By mocking her.
By mocking me.
Through verbal humiliation.
No.
To a giant audience.
I just gave her a small bit of feedback on
That's
her
motivation.
Aiming. That was all.
Like,
that was all.
Don't mess it up.
No. It was very, very clear,
had to do with
articulate
my,
feedback.
And then giggled about it with others later on.
I'm sorry for that.
And then giggled about it. That's the part that really stung, you know? Like, we had this great time, and then I walk up at all the Christmas parties we went to.
Sure would have been nice to have a little more candy and a little less giggling.
You know what I'm saying?
That's what
you
I've been saying all these years I've known him.
Wow.
Just
wow.
A little more candy and a little less giggling.
Let me go near the way
Missy, if it makes
it.
You feel better, I've hunted with Clay a fair amount, and he's never bought me candy.
Has he ever giggled
he bought
at
me
you?
He's never stopped giggling.
I don't know that he's ever... He actually might have giggled at me. I remember the time when that famous picture that's on Instagram now when we were young and you were good looking and I was not. That hog that you've got so beautifully displayed out on the rock there. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that? How that went down?
I remember
no, you
killing
don't.
It.
Yeah. Here's what happened. We Clay's
Josh
like, hey, we pull into the National Forest.
I'm worried
and he's
about
like,
where this is going.
He's like, hey, I think there's some hogs. I bet there's some hogs down here. And I'm like, awesome. I'm so excited because he told me so many stories about killing hogs, and we get out of the truck, and
this.
We
I just
you have
I
to climb the hill to this field. And he said, we get to the corner of the field. He's got his bow. I've got mine. Well, I say mine. Gary Newcomb's old bow that I had stolen. And
wearing Gary Newcomb's old pants.
Probably, uh-huh. probably. And he said, here's what we're going to do. If we see some hogs, we're both going to draw, and I'll count to three, and we'll both shoot at the same time. I'm like, okay. So sure enough, we crest the hill, and it's barely shooting light. I mean, it's just about to be dark. And he goes, look at that. And there's probably half a dozen hogs out. And he's like, okay, you draw, I'll draw. And I draw, and Clay's goes, one, two, and he just drills this hog, and the hogs scatter. I'm like, what happened to three?
You shoot on three, man.
You're supposed to get that squared away. Is it one, two, three, shoot?
I
one,
totally
two,
forgot
shoot.
About that. Yeah. Because me
so Misty,
and my
you feel
pain.
My pain. Oh, I actually had wow. a really
2022 has really started up for us relationally. Let me say though, and this is connected to our mystery guest who I'm going to introduce.
Yes. Oh, okay.
My first cousin Todd Marriott and I successfully pulled off a double nice. Where we drew on hogs. We were in tree stands. Counted to three. We had a little more time to plan.
Did Todd do the counting? Yeah,
to Clay's credit, it was a very last minute, like,
we were
fly
on our
by
way
the seat
to deer
of our
camp,
pants.
Yeah. And we pulled past the spot that I thought, I bet there's some hogs up there. And, I mean, we jumped out of the truck, and literally within 5 minutes, 10 minutes, I had killed a hog.
I had not.
The other time with Todd, it was a little more strategic, quite strategic. We went in, found a wide oak acorn tree, dropped rain and acorns, hog sign all underneath it, went in, hung stands, woke up way too early because we didn't set our clocks back and it was time change. And we got in the tree like hours before daylight, sat there, daylight, hogs came in, killed them. Just like, well, pretty much killed them. It's a long story. It's a really long story. But that's connected to Rick Spicer,
Todd
our mystery guest.
Yay,
because Rick knows my other first cousin, Todd's brother, Sean Marriott.
That's right.
There's a and lot of name dropping on this podcast so far.
We're going to need a flow chart.
Welcome,
on
let's
Instagram.
Welcome Rick Spicer. Rick, yes, hand clap for Rick.
Thanks
so
very much.
So Rick was the fulsome napper on
which
the last
was
podcast.
Riveting audio, by the way.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
that's all Clay's that, doing. So,
I'm just a napper.
You just, you're hearing that clap,
I just
clap,
hit rocks.
Clap,
yeah.
You're just hoping
Clay's
for the
one that captured it all. But no, I really appreciated being able to be part of that. I had a great time.
Yeah. So the trend with guests that you could in the future be able to forecast who's going to be here. If you're local, I'll try to get you on the render. You know there what you I mean?
Go. Sure.
But like, so the other guests would have been Ranella, who's in Montana.
He'll
David
never
Meltzer.
Be on this podcast. He knows better.
I think you're setting yourself up right here. Like, what if? What?
Well,
you see what I'm saying? I mean, I'd be careful.
It's not. There's no hard and fast rules.
I think that Rick is special.
You don't want to be
Rick is special,
and that's why he's here.
She don't want to be this guy.
She's gonna be
she's
no
doing a pretty good job.
Okay. Rick came in like last minute and it had not made many Folsom points. So it's not like Rick is like the national Folsom guy. He is a fantastic flint napper, though. He gave me this piece right here.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, here's
oh,
the
he made that.
When I was you listening this. To this on the way up here, and he started working on that Folsom point, I thought, man, it's going to be so cool. Everybody on the range is going to get a Folsom.
Merry Christmas.
You know, you're
going to
just hand
them
out like candy.
Yeah, these are easy to make.
Hey, this is gorgeous. I'm holding the one Rick made, and it is beautiful.
Thank you.
Now, that's not a Folsom point. How would you describe that point, Rick?
That's basically a pretty standard arrowhead. It's a side notch point with some fairly heavy serrations. So it doesn't follow any specific...
It's just a functional hunting stone point.
Exactly. And that's exactly what I made that
okay, Rick,
for.
Okay, Rick, let's say you're a Paleolithic hunter. You've suddenly appeared in North America by which way is a complete mystery to modern science and all of us. And you got a big piece of stone. What kind of stone point are you making to put on your arrow?
Well, a lot of it has to do
with... And you know nothing that you know now.
I'm going to make the easiest thing I can, right? Like, what tools do I... I mean, I've actually put myself in similar situations before where I've, like,
really?
Walked out into the woods with nothing and tried to be like, what can I make? Mm. You know, I've done things like the most extreme example, I lived for a month one time out in the woods with nothing.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Where? Where
in
were
a swamp
you?
In Louisiana.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you? Oh, wow. We need more info on that. I mean, okay. Answer the question. Then we're going back to that. We're going back. No sidetracks. The question is, what kind of stone point would you make?
So the reason, the
idea is that maybe Rick would have been the one that came up with a Folsom point. Let's see.
So, it has everything to do with like what tools I have available to me, what type of stones around. But essentially, the first thing you're going to do is like try to break the thing. It's like you're going to pick up this rock and figure out how to break it. And you can do that by hitting the rock on something or pick up another rock and hit that rock with it.
And that's got to be the right kind of rock, though. It's got to be
a
metamorphic or
it's going to be harder. Yeah, it's going to be harder than the rock that you're hitting, harder than the chert itself or the flint that you're hitting, because if it's not, it's just going to break when you hit it, right? Like if you pick up a piece of sandstone and try to hit it, it's just going to...
Well, I'm saying you can't just go out here and pick up a piece of limestone and nap it or...
No,
or
because it's...
Sandstone.
Geologically, the structure of the stone is not right. You need a stone that's amorphous or that is consistent throughout, because if it has a lot of impurities, it won't... The entire napping process is built around a concept called the Hertzian cone, either the Hertzian cone or the conchoidal fracture. You ever take a BB gun and shoot a window? What happens to the back of the window?
No.
You ever done that before?
Never done that.
Shoot a piece, let's just call it a piece of glass. How about that? It doesn't have to be a window. Oof. What happens to the BB, though, when it hits the window? What does the glass do?
Oh, it just shatters.
Breaks?
No. Not necessarily. I mean, it might, but if it doesn't break, I should have prefaced that.
Yeah, it makes a little...
Cone.
Yeah, it makes
that's
a
Hertzian cone. Okay.
Okay.
And so, and because glass is crystal, it's amorphous in nature. Okay. It's the same throughout. So we're looking for stone that has that same type of properties. So if you take a rock and you strike it with another rock, what you're getting when you strike it is you're creating a Hertzian cone. So it's, in other words, it's a predictable angle that you know what's going to happen when you hit it. And that is what makes napping possible, is because once you understand what angle to hit the stone, you can predict the angle at which the stone will break. And that allows you to craft it into a particular shape.
And that only happens when you're working with stone that is consistent throughout.
Exactly.
So that would eliminate sedimentary stone
Within any kind. Within reason, but yes. For the most part, you're not going to be working with limestone or sandstone. So no sedimentary rocks as far as what you would be napping.
Okay. So going back to you living in the woods for a month. Define for us what having nothing means.
The clothes that I walked in with.
Really?
Yeah.
Just walked in with some clothes.
Yeah, that was actually part of a History Channel project that I did.
Oh, really? What was that?
It's a show called Alone the Beast.
Oh.
And you can watch it on Hulu. Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know you were on that.
You can watch it on...
I saw it.
You saw Rick?
Yes.
It's all coming back to you now.
It's coming back. I thought I was having a flashback.
He's familiar.
Yeah. It was like three people.
Yeah, there's three people, and it's like a process, or not a limit, but it's basically, can you make it?
Was
to
one
the
of
end?
The three people a hippie? I feel like there's always in those shows.
On a different episode, not on mine.
Is there any way that y'all think that this story will now overshadow the story of me, the perception of me being
your name
mean
again?
To my wife?
Oh, come on.
We'll bring that up appropriately.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Rick.
No, the only reason I bring it up is because, like, that, you know, well, first of all, there's no rocks in Louisiana. I don't know if anyone knows that or not, if you haven't spent any time down there. So one of the things that was most frustrating to the whole experience is that I've developed the skill and I couldn't do it. There were no rocks to nap while I was down there. So it's, you know, in a way, it's sort of pointless that I bring it up, in the sense that I wasn't able to realize those skills or to test myself in that situation. But I have done it here in the Ozarks.
Once you get done with this story, I've got a story of why there are no rocks in Louisiana. But
I thought you were going to say one time I lived in the woods for 31 months. Days.
I didn't even 47 have clothes. Minutes.
So how did you live?
He was begging to free.
We worked out how to cut up an alligator with a reed.
Whoa.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. We processed a whole alligator with
a, so you had a partner
with a common reed. There were three of us in the beginning.
Okay.
Yeah. So you're working together?
Or were you competing against each other?
No. It was a team effort.
Nobody got voted off.
It's like the anti-survivor.
No, it's like, it was weird that they shouldn't.
The collaborator.
Like, I'll say this now because I don't think I'm under any like contracts or anything anymore. But like the name was really misleading. We weren't alone ever. So like they tried to hook it on to the other successful series of Alone,
marketing of
because
Alone.
It was like the same network,
right?
But like they should have called it something totally different, and I think that was a lot of the issues they had with promoting it is because we weren't alone.
You had a crew there. It was doing
that. And we weren't filming ourselves. I mean, we would at night, but we were there was a whole film crew during the daytime. So not only were we not alone in the sense that there were other people in the experience with us, but there was a whole film crew 6 days a week out there with us.
You could put just an asterisk, like Alone.
Right. I think the direction you're going. I think that we should all suggest alternate names.
Yes.
Together in the Woods.
Alone-ish.
There you go. Yeah. Alone-ish. That's so good.
But the main point is that you didn't get support from these people, though.
No, yeah. We were out there figuring it out. And I mean, I'm not a big guy, and I think I lost 23 pounds. By the time it was all over.
Did the camera crew, were they eating? Like, would they just pull a Snicker bar out?
No, they were. I have a lot of respect for those guys because they respected us. They never ate in front of us, not once. And so, they were actually, I really got along well with the camera guys that were there. Good. They were very encouraging.
See them with gummy bears.
they were cool for sure. And in fact, we would know, they would leave and we were like, they're eating.
They're
know what they're doing.
And come back and smell it.
Yeah.
And they'd come back and we'd be like, what'd you guys have for lunch? And they'd always find a way to change the subject or something, you know? They'd be like, I don't really know what you're talking about. We were having a meeting or, you know, something like that.
We were
interesting.
That's
so
cool.
So Rick is the Flint Napper.
That's a whole
from
other
the Folsom
podcast
episode.
Man.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, you know, I know Clay Hayes who
won Alone. Yeah, that's a big deal.
Boy, it really is.
Yeah,
I mean, not only did he win $500,000, but he stayed in the woods and I've never watched those kind of shows. We just don't have. Network television haven't for 20 years.
We do
and
have fun
so I,
games.
I never
no candy,
no TV.
Mocking me,
lots
when
of giggling. we're seeing a window into life.
I would be pretty unfamiliar with these kind of shows. And when I talked to Clay, it was interesting talking to him because I talked to him after he'd won, but during the period of time when he couldn't tell anybody if he won,
right?
And he was under contractual agreement to not give any intel.
You were like. Where'd you get the new car?
They're serious about that stuff.
Yeah, I followed him out in the parking lot to see what kind of truck he drove.
You're like, oh, you got a brand new 4x4. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
How much money did he win?
I mean, this is not like private intel. This is the whole marketing of the show. Okay. So I'm not like giving away insider info. $500,000.
Yeah, $500,000.
$500,000.
That's what I understood.
Yeah.
And he said it was 100% legit. I mean, he said... They turn you loose, and he was in British Columbia.
Yeah, I've watched those.
I actually have. Several friends who have been on that show, and it's legit. Like, they're not playing.
They come in for periodic medical checks to make sure the people aren't going to die.
Yep.
Clay is thin. He's a thin guy.
Yeah, he's super lean guy.
He put on as much weight as he could before, so he put on 20 pounds, which was really hard for him. Put on 20 pounds, and then he lost 20 pounds in the first 20 days, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, wow.
And then he stayed 74 days, but man, on those
That's
shows,
a long time.
I kind of got to, once Clay was on there, I started following it and kind of started getting some intel from other seasons. And usually it's one or two things that happen that give someone this major advantage.
Right.
And they were in a very non-game rich area of British Columbia. And Clay is an excellent traditional archer. He killed a deer at some point, and it was the only big game animal killed as I recall. In the whole show.
They're allowed like 10 items? Isn't it like 10 items?
I believe that's right, yeah. Yeah. You get a list of 10 things. Yeah.
One of my items would be an RV. is that
I would, okay. One of mine would have been gummy bears for Misty.
Just one gummy bear
for Misty. Send these to my wife.
So when I came home on day 4, she'd be happy.
Day 4.
Okay, back to
we're recording the podcast here.
Back to why there are no rocks in Louisiana.
I forgot about
I'm serious.
That.
I have a really legitimate answer. Do you know this?
I have my own reason, but I would be curious to see
his
if it's the same
is a little
as yours.
Bit,
no,
it's a little destabilizing.
The environmental soil science major is about to explain.
Don't be thrown off by Clay's. Do you know this? That's just his mode of operation.
He's a little unsure.
The best thing to do is just nod and then let him say whatever he knows.
Okay. The Ouachita Mountains.
He just Googled it.
Are the place where the South American continent bumped into the North American continent. The mountains buckled. At one time, those mountains were 10,000 feet tall. The Ouachita Mountains, the only mountain range running east and west in between the Rockies and the Appalachians. Those mountains were snow-capped and at one time were on the coast of what we would call a Gulf. I mean, it wasn't the Gulf of Mexico at that time. At that time, there was no country of Mexico.
Oh, really?
But the
Did
ocean...
Did they still have Mexican
a,
food?
A shallow ocean came all the way up to the interior of what is now Arkansas.
Yep.
And so there would have been a 10,000-foot plus range of coastal mountains where the Ouachitas now are. Those mountains eroded over time and filled in what is now called the Ouachita Basin, which the Ouachita Basin is essentially parts of East Texas, all of Louisiana, and parts of western Mississippi. And so the sediment of the Ouachitas formed Louisiana and all that stuff, and all the rocks stayed here.
So Louisiana is the runoff.
Yeah, Louisiana is it filled in the ocean, and then the rocks. When you go down the Ouachitas, I mean, it's rocky and rough because all that stuff stayed. I really don't know if that's why there are no rocks in Louisiana.
What do you think?
Well, I think to add to that, I would say that obviously, like the Delta and where the Mississippi flows into the Gulf, it's a huge alluvial plain.
Right.
There has been eons worth of silt and sediment deposited there.
Sounds like he's supporting
likely
my thing.
You didn't use the word alluvial,
feet deep.
Yeah, alluvial really made that explanation nice.
As soon as he went alluvial, I thought,
Rick spends a month in the swamp, and all of a sudden, he's the expert on the render.
He said alluvial, and I was like, God, this guy's weird.
He said alluvial, I was like,
I like that
You
word.
Had me at alluvial.
It's the Rick render.
Rick, no.
You just got Rick render.
Oh, he just got Rick render.
The reason Rick is here is he is now the new host of Rick render. I have been fired. I think we're on the same channel.
Yeah.
I think we're on the same channel.
I think
channel.
We are. You had the early version. I had the little bit later version. I think they matched.
Agree to disagree here.
Woo, man, woo. That was good.
Good stuff.
That was good. Switching topics slightly, just a smidgen. Daniel Roop has been on a roll, and he killed another deer this week.
Oh, man.
Number four?
Hey, number four. And all giving Clay a hard time aside, I would not be able to hunt if it wasn't for Clay Newcomb.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yep. Whoa.
He is a fantastic
podcast just
teacher.
Took a swift turn. A
little tear in my eye here.
Yeah. It really took a turn.
I have been. So, you know, we've been away for a long time, and it has been so fun.
This
has
been your first fall back in 12 years.
First fall back in 12 years, and I just got my fourth deer with a bow.
That's
and
awesome,
I'm just
man.
Having a wonderful time.
That's awesome.
Still in the freezer.
Hey, your son is in a lot of pictures. Is he loving this?
He really. I'm probably this spring gonna get him a bow and start okay. taking him out, but he comes with it. He came with me this last time.
Now did he didn't hunt with you though?
No, I just don't have a setup for two of us to be way up in a tree,
right?
But this last time, the whole last hour I was out, it was just raining, 30 degrees,
yeah,
raining, turned to snow, and then I took this deer, and so the whole place was wet. And I went home and got my second son, who loves to come with me and track him. And he tracked it with me for about an hour.
Oh, really?
And
I had to do a pretty good track.
That's hard, yeah.
He got out in front of me. I was like, his name's Zion. I call him Big Z. I was like, Big Z, get out in front of me. You know, he just did a great job. We had
that's
a awesome. Grand old
that's
time.
Great.
That's
yeah.
probably a really good way to introduce him.
Yeah.
Letting him see kind of the drama of the of a trail job.
And I, and you know me, and you know when you get a deer, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm pretty sure I got a good shot. I saw it, but did I? And you know, are you going to get this deer? Are we going to find it? And you go like 15 minutes without seeing blood, and then you're like, oh, I got it over here. You know,
how far did the deer run?
He went, she went about 175 yards, but a real circuitous pass.
Really?
Path, you know, just all kinds
of. Did you hit it a little bit far back?
A little bit far back.
But
Whoa,
it didn't make any difference.
Super this impressive.
Is, well, this is what he.
If you hit him very far forward, you miss him.
Exactly.
This is not.
This is what
I'd be glad to give you some advice. If you're looking for advice.
Every time I pull back on a deer, I just hear Clay giggling. Not at all.
That's good.
Congratulations.
That's good. Yeah, lots of deer meat.
He stays with me. He's gutted and now skinned and processed three of them.
How old is he?
He's 13, 14. Okay. He's 14.
Perfect.
Yeah, so that's
if you
awesome.
Gut a deer,
yeah, that's good.
And you get to hunt. Yeah.
Yeah. Time to hunt.
Montana Knife Company was founded by Josh Smith, one of the world's most experienced master bladesmiths. He's been making knives for 30 years, made in the USA and manufactured locally in Montana. The knives come with a multi-generational warranty and free sharpening. Designed, tested, and built by hunters, MKC is a hunting knife company first and foremost. They have the sharpest knives out of the box and the easiest knives to sharpen. And that is the dadgum truth. You better be careful with them when you get them. They are sharp. MKC is a fast-growing company. They just hired their 55th employee and are looking to hire about 50 more in the next year or so. I've carried a lot of these Montana knives, and the one that I like the most is their Speed Goat, which is a lightweight hunting knife, just the right size. MKC knives sell out within minutes of being released. So head over to MontanaKnifeCompany.com. They have new knives for sale every Thursday at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. So check their website and sign up for their text and email alerts. That is the best way to find out when they have knives available. Use code BEARGREASE10 for 10% off your first order. Montana Knife Company, working knives for working people. The old timers say that the turkeys start gobbling when the leaves are as big as squirrels' ears and the red buds start popping. And we're about there. And we are there in the South. The Onyx Hunt app is one of my most valuable tools in the spring woods. With tools like coniferous versus deciduous tree distribution layer, you can save time by locating edges or transition areas of mixing habitats from home. Find an area like this with water in close proximity, and more than likely, there will be a gobbling turkey nearby. Knowing the exact boundaries of private ground ensures I stay on the right side of the fence, but can easily find public ground to go see if I can't strike a gobbler. If you do get one to sound off, using compass mode and waypoints will help you pinpoint his exact location, allowing you to move in and make the perfect setup to bring him right into your lap. Download the Onyx Hunt app today. You'll be glad you did. Onyx has a special offer for you. Use code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt this spring. We've all seen plenty of gadgets and fads come and go, but here's one product that's stood the test of time, Seafoam Motor Treatment. Lots of hunters and anglers know that Seafoam helps engines run better and last longer. It's really simple. You pour it in your gas tank. Seafoam cleans harmful fuel deposits that cause engine problems. I'm talking common stuff like hard starts, rough engine performance, or lost fuel economy. Seafoam is an easy way to prevent or overcome these problems. Just pour a can in your gas tank and let it clean your fuel system. You probably know someone who's used a can of Seafoam to get their truck or boat going again. People everywhere rely on Seafoam to keep their trucks, boats, and small engines running the way they should the entire season. Help your engine run better and last longer. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit seafoamworks.com to learn more.
Hey, so Rick makes his own bows, does pretty much everything. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah.
So he every single component of his hunting weapon for bow hunting deer, he made.
The only thing that I routinely use that, you know, I don't.
Is it crossbow?
I do hunt with steel broadheads a lot.
Okay, that's right.
Yeah, to clarify, like I have hunted a lot with stone points.
Right.
And I have taken a couple of shots at deer And learned some tough lessons, but I have yet to take one down with a stone point. Yeah.
But you're using a self bow.
Yes.
Which a self, do you know what a self bow is, Dan?
Nope.
Okay. A self bow is a one piece bow.
It's a bow that has no laminations. It's been carved from a single piece of wood.
That's right. As opposed to a traditional bow like those hanging on the wall that have laminations.
Yeah.
So you basically took a stave and whittled
cut down
out
a tree, split the trunk into pieces, and then carve the bow from one of those pieces.
It'd be the is most primitive awesome type of archery equipment.
Yeah.
So, that's awesome. Pretty cool. That's real cool. You know, I've spent a fair bit of time with a stone point on the end of my arrow hunting. I told you about it.
Yeah.
So there was a year where I took some stone points that my friend David Bond here in Northwest Arkansas made for me. It was a hybrid primitive deal. I was using a recurve bow, so which is a modern traditional archery.
Traditional
bow.
Yeah.
And I used a carbon arrow, and I took a 125 grain field point and on a bandsaw cut a notch out of the field point, put the half of the stone point into this little wedge on a
JB
field
Weld
point. I should have used JB Weld, but I used
Flex tape.
I used sinew that I bought, sinew and epoxy, and basically attached a stone point to a field point so that it had threads on it, so I can thread it into a carbon arrow. And I was going to try to kill a bear with it. And I hunted a long time and just never killed a bear that year. And then I was telling Rick this, I was later tree stand whitetail hunting, trying to kill a whitetail with it. And I dropped it just for whatever reason. The arrows didn't fit on the string real good. And I dropped an arrow out of the tree. Mm. And when that arrow hit the ground with no real force behind it, that stone point snapped.
Huh.
Wow.
And that was humbling because most of the humans that have ever lived on planet Earth, or let's just say a lot of them, made a living off stone points.
Yeah.
And I mean, just to think, it is not easy to kill stuff with a stone point, especially when your family depends on it and your wife is left eye dominant.
It's it really didn't hard. Humble you very much, though.
Listen to this.
She's like, did you get a deer? No, well, you better have some candy then.
I'm a gummy bear.
Somebody else is kicking tonight.
I've kind of tiptoed around the primitive world. I've never gone as primitive as some of the stuff that Rick's doing, but had deep respect for the guys that really shot primitive archery. My brother's father-in-law, David Albright, primitive archery usually goes like this.
It's patrilineal. Patrilineal.
Yeah. It's always like somebody something.
Okay.
Is the guy that you know that's done this.
Yeah. I feel like
fair. No, I was inspired to get into traditional archery when 20 plus years ago when I was a compound archer, but I would go to my brother's father-in-law's house.
Who was a fantastic traditional archer.
Yeah. And he just
built his own bows.
It's a lifestyle, and as it is for so many of these guys. And he made his own bows, I just was like, as a kid, 20 something, I was like, now that is a cool way to bow hunt. But it was so stinking hard, I just didn't think it was approachable. Yeah. And it would be about 10 or 12 years after I met him that I finally kind of dove in. And that's what you kind of have to do.
You
kind of just have to dive in.
There's just a lot of time involved in it, and I get it. A lot of people just want to go deer hunting. They don't necessarily want to have all this extra stuff that they have to do.
Yeah.
But if you enjoy working with your hands, crafting things, experimenting with things, it's a really rewarding way to go about it.
Being hungry.
Yeah.
That too. Yeah.
Rick is pretty thin.
I'll be the first one to admit, I don't kill as many deer as a lot of my friends do. Especially the ones that hunt with rifles.
It's the ultimate act of hunting self-limitation.
Sure.
Yeah. And that's really what we do with every aspect of modern hunting. 99% of people, and there's some percentage that don't, but we limit ourselves. I went duck hunting last week, and it was the policy amongst the brethren I was with to only use 20 gauges.
Oh, really?
And
got it.
It'd be like, well, why are you just using a 20 gauge? And they're like, you know, in their eyes, it was just a idea of self-limitation. Huh. And so we constantly, constantly do that. So transitioning into talking about the podcast, I invited Devin Pettigrew here, but he lives in Colorado, so he couldn't come.
Maybe
but
we could have gone there, field trip.
Field trip, Boulder, Colorado. I thought his section was so interesting. I talked about it with a couple of the different guys, maybe all of them, but about the transitions, the technology transitions. That was really interesting to me because that's something we see throughout history is human technology increasing, and there's always some kind of drama at the transition. And we know that the fulsome points were in vogue and being used by this culture for 1,000 years. I don't remember if it was on the podcast or not. I think maybe I took it out. But when I was talking to Devin, I was like, no, it wasn't him. It was somebody else I was talking to. I said, does 1,000 years sound like a long time to you? And they were like, yeah, it seems like eternity. But to me, that sounded like a really short amount of time. When you're thinking about human history and all the other 1,000-year blocks that are in there, and just for this short period of time, there was this real radical technology that was used. It phased in and it phased out. And just there would have been people having conversations about it. They would have had extremely practical conversations about that technology just like we do with our broadhead stuff. I mean, essentially, we could have a conversation today about using cut-on impact heads or using expandable broadheads. All of us would be like, oh, man, you got to do this or you got to do that or I can't believe you did that. There had to have been a time when they were like, man, I can't believe you're still fluting those things.
Fluting points were like fluter, disco music.
Dirty flute.
Yeah.
Like, this is really cool. No, this is really terrible.
It was great for the time.
Yeah, this is like 3 years of this. I'm out.
So I was probably put too much thought energy into form or function, like or was it functional?
Mm-hmm.
And I have decided today, this morning, I listened to the podcast again. I decided it wasn't functional.
It wasn't?
No. Yeah. I mean, I just think about all the guys that have, you know, if you don't have an outlet for art, like we don't have any material art from that time period. And the thing
we do from that time period of human history, but not with the fulsome culture. Yeah. Not much.
If you don't have that and you're putting all your energy into this thing, at some point somebody should have said, this is my signature. You know what I mean? I'm gonna flute this thing. Because I would have done it. You know, I can't tell you how many decks I've built where I just do a certain thing that, to make it look cool or have a signature about it. I think that probably there was the guy that fluted and then he taught. I mean, if we're talking about small family groups, there had to be a guy that was the first one to flute these things and he taught everybody else how to do this. And then it just kind of carried on until people, you know, either had their own signature or they found something more functional. Mm-hmm. So I've decided it is not functional.
Hey, I want to give some backing to what Josh just said. When Josh started talking, I didn't know he was going to say that, but Josh is extremely crafty with his hands. Josh is a very skilled carpenter. He ties flies.
Dan's
he builds Dan's belt.
Oh, yeah. Where's your belt buckle, Dan?
I wore these pants to church yesterday, so I have my church belt.
Oh, wow. Is the black bear not good enough for your church? And Josh also makes hats. So working with your hands, Josh makes purses, leather
bags,
purses.
Leather bags.
Yeah, leather bags.
Does your wife have a mustache?
She does not.
No,
not
but
yet.
I'm saying that's coming from a place of a guy that works with his hands.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing that I thought about that when I can't remember the gentleman that was saying at the Folsom site, the Folsom expert.
Meltzer.
Yeah. He was saying you could kind of tell there were probably three different.
Yeah, he could identify different individuals based on their style.
And he was kind of saying, I wouldn't be surprised if these folks kind of had their own signature. So one of the things that made me think was in the cultural anthropology class that I teach, there is a hunter-gatherer group that was still in existence up until like the 1950s that was studied extensively. And so there would have been really similar to Folsom peoples, but they had an intense desire to all be the same, to not stand out. So it was real egalitarian.
Interesting.
So you could observe their actual behaviors because
like
you're not looking in the ground.
Or whatever,
so there are bands of 25 to 30 people that would go around these water holes and they would hunt and gather. And I can't remember the mechanism that they used to hunt. But, They shot arrows. And so they had these entire rituals as they would make arrows and then they would exchange them. So, because they needed to have everything level, because personal property would cause tension within.
They were hunter-gatherer Amish.
Basically, yeah. And so there were probably were three different folks that, that chipped those rocks out. Mm-hmm. But then if they were really interdependent people that were living day to day, subsistence dwelling, I don't know if like other hunter-gatherer cultures that we've been able to observe in real life would espouse this really rugged individualism of I'm going to leave my mark on this.
So I'm deeply intrigued by what you're saying. Are you agreeing or disagreeing with the idea of function?
He's disagreeing with me.
Well, I think
because that's what Dan does.
That's what we all
function.
Do.
I think. I mean, they wouldn't do it if it didn't work. But right. It probably is also beautiful and something you take pride in. But the idea of kind of setting yourself apart
would not have been
that,
something.
I don't know if that would have existed.
See, I
in
think
a
that is an excellent point that gives a whole layer to the culture that I've never even thought of. That these people would have had. And they would have. It's not like these were humans that had the same cognitive capabilities as us. They had the same emotions. They were just like us. One of their babies could have been the president of the United States. Mm-hmm. And they would have had deeply set culture just like us.
Yeah, highly sophisticated.
It's just hidden from us. Mm-hmm. And so the idea that they would have just had these values of no one can stand out. But I was going to say that could be to his point, because it would be non-utilitarian if they just didn't want to change stuff. Like sure. if a generation woke up one day and they were the hunters and they were like, we're doing this like dad did, 99% of the reason is that it's because that's the way we were taught. There wasn't this idea of self-discovery or we're trying to be different. The way they survived was they were the same.
Yeah.
That is part non-utilitarian.
And that's
it's just a whole different.
Make up a percentage, but probably 2/3 of the world that is interdependent, agrarian. You know, they have a huge value for honor and tradition.
Mm-hmm.
In the West, where we're ruggedly individualistic, we kind of have this luxury of what kind of clothes do I wear? And is this shirt me? And does this express me well? But most of the world that doesn't live at our level of wealth, they value tradition because tradition is what keeps you alive.
Why are we so ridiculous? I am fully convinced that we have, as Western thinkers, you can't help. We are, our worldview is dominated by things that are very hard to control or to see and understand about ourselves. Us sitting here trying to understand these people is like us trying to read Braille and having no idea what any of it means.
And we
will
read, if we're not careful, we'll read ourselves back into
their
that.
History.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, of course we would.
I can't help but compare it to the Mac PC argument.
Let's go.
Because I'm a Mac or I'm a PC, I like Macs because I like to say because of functionality, because it's easier to use. But also I think they're cool.
Mm.
Do you see what I'm saying? And so, I was listening to y'all argue, and I thought, and I wondered if maybe they had, probably not shirts that said, I'm a Mac, I'm a Folsom, but...
somebody said the Folsom Fluters would have been a good 3-on-3 basketball name. The Folsom Fluters.
But I get, I wondered about when it stopped, when the utility wore out on it, because they got to come to a point, if you're only... What is it, Rick? 30% of the ones you make are coming out?
There's 30-40% failure rate, I believe.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, that guy, Bob the Arrowhead Maker, he's only going to be able to tote so many rocks with him. And when they take that process out of there, when it doesn't have to be fluted like that, when it doesn't have to look just because Grandpa did it, somebody's got to say at some point, Frank, you're wasting a lot of rocks.
Frank, you idiot.
Now, I think it was a frustrated
wife.
Frank the Fluter.
Frank got his wife some candy before he made it.
We know your grandpa always did it like that, and his grandpa did.
Yeah, I believe that there are actual examples of that type of thing. Like, do you know the Sloan site here in Arkansas? Are you familiar with that?
I'm not familiar with it.
You should really check that one out. So it is one of a very significant depository of this Dalton. The Dalton Point is what's prevalent at the Sloan site, and it's near Curley's Ridge here in Arkansas. And there's different types of rocks there, but as I understand it from things that I've read about that, as the stone sources begin to get further away and they would dry up, then they started to like not produce the points the same way anymore because the resource wasn't as good as it once was. And of course, that's still very much a theory, but I think there's some evidence to support that theory that when they could get high quality stone and it was available, they were going to produce these really fascinating articulate points. But when that went away, they didn't spend as much time, or they like began to work on a different type of point because the resource wasn't as rich as it was.
Yeah, it becomes more valuable as it decreases in availability. Yep.
So there's a lot of factors at work here, and it's probably not just one thing. My conclusion is that it's impossible for us to know, which we know that.
Agreed.
It's clear that there was utility to the fluting in the way that it fit into the haft and all the things we talked about on the podcast that made it functional. But I also like what Dr. Meltzer said, is he said, essentially he was like, maybe it could have been both.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, he said they found bits of red ochre in places where they napped, which typically, he said it could have been part of the mastic, the adhesive that they used to plug it in, you know, to plug it into the haft. But he said usually red ochre was part of a spiritual...
Ritualistic.
Like they were putting ochre on these points, whatever they did. So I think Misty Newcomb nailed it on the head, despite being left eye dominant.
Left eye dominant. He's probably trying to make up for that.
What did you say about the Mac computers? They're functional,
but also they're kind of cool.
That's it. Functional but cool.
I mean, I don't think it's a stretch to think that one led to the other either, right? Like,
right.
And it could also be the chicken egg thing. Like, as far as like, was it functional first, and then because it was functional, it became sacred, and we, you know,
yeah, there you go.
Right.
Or for whatever reason, it was the other way. We decided this was sacred, but as we used it, it was also very functional, which reinforced that.
Yeah.
But to your point, we'll never know. But it's fun to talk about.
Yeah.
It's not anyone else. I still do not understand what an addle-addle is.
Oh,
he was
really
describing it, and I'm so sorry.
You should have brought one.
Made one.
It's basically a...
It's a stick.
Basically a stick.
It's a stick, but there's a lever on it.
Describe it.
Okay, so it's a stick, and they vary in length, but on average, we'll say they're about 2 feet long. On the back, there's a spur. So it's a stick, and it has a little spur on the back, okay? The spur is where the back of the spear fits into, okay?
Gotcha.
Yeah,
the other end is a handle. And so it's a platform on which the spear sits. And as you throw it, it extends that lever.
So, I mean, it's so simple. It's just a stick with a spur.
Yeah, you hold
on,
on to it.
And they get more complex.
So that's what he's talking about, the wrist motion.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm so sorry. Now I understand.
You know, I'm glad you said that because we spent a ton of time verbally trying to describe what a fulsome point looked like. I was torn with overlapping content because the thing you don't want to do in literature and different things is overlap too much, so you say the same thing over and over because people get bored. I asked Brunella, Meltzer, Devin Pettigrew, and then Rick showed us what one looked like, trying to describe a fulsome point, and because I just felt like that was important. And then I said, go Google it, and if you had an image of it, it would make sense. Man, I've been thinking about this for 5 months, and I now just now feel like when I see a fulsome point, I get it. And it came from watching Rick make one, actually watching him make one. And by get it, I mean, I see the value in it. I see the skill in it. I see the art in it. I understand the functionality of it.
Yeah.
And it took that long. I say all that to say, I did not describe what an addle-addle was because I thought everybody knew.
Hey, do you have a video of him making that that you could put on Instagram?
Yeah. Do you know what social media is?
Did you put one on?
He did.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of it? It's called Instagram.
It didn't show the actual flute breaking off, though.
That's what I want to see.
That's what I want to see.
Well, I mean, it was. I was holding the audio equipment. What I was doing was equivalent. It was probably harder than making a fluted point.
Probably.
Okay.
What you showed us in the video was you. I want to see the stone.
I was holding the audio thing, and then I was filming like this. I was filming Rick. So.
Hey, I made a yeah. It wasn't great. In the fifth grade.
Did you really?
In the tomato field, my brother, my older brother Tim. No, I'll tell you why I can't bring it up. My older brother Tim, he's big into finding airheads and stuff. Like he knows a lot about them. Anyway, he's 8 years older than me. When I was in the fifth grade, he was telling me about, you know, the Indians that lived here, out here where we raised tomatoes, where we had just found some points. You know, they used atlatls and bows and this and that. So he explained to me what it was. So I got two tomato sticks, and I put a fence staple in into one, and I sharpened another one. And when he came back home a couple of days later to visit or whatever, he just lived just down the road, I threw it at him.
Mm.
I missed him, but he got the part that I threw and chased me down and beat the fire out of it. So they work on both ends.
Mm.
So, but it did work. I mean, I had that fence staple on the end of it.
It worked good.
Oh, yeah, you can throw it.
You know, there was a History Channel show, Top Shot, was like a marksmanship competition where they, you know, everything from modern, super modern firearms and muskets and all that stuff, but they did a big part of the competition with atlatls, and they were...
Oh, sweet.
They were...
Tomato stick. Did you know Missouri...
Missouri has an atlatl season.
Missouri specifically atlatl season. I think it is a crime against humanity and our ancestors that every state in this country doesn't have an atlatl season. I mean, how many deer are we going to kill with atlatls?
Right.
I was about to say, that needs to be year-round.
Three.
You can't do it in Arkansas.
At night.
Or a spear.
Can't do it.
They're worried we're going to maim a bunch of deer. And they're
No, Dan.
Oh, wow. You're getting the same treatment I got for that left eye dominance.
Nope.
What's the reason?
That is the thought process, which I believe is an incorrect thought process.
Do you have reason to back up?
We are here. Atlatls work.
Hey, Roger,
follow that back. Atlatl is the most primitive human tool on the earth, and I legally can't go out in my backyard and try to kill a deer with it, but I can use a .30-06.
Well, here's the thing else you got to think about that.
If we were standing in a court of law and they let me, and my lawyer let me talk, we would win this one.
Oh, this is the classic mistake. Right now, you're going to defend yourself. I do not need a court-appointed lawyer. I will speak for my... This is what everybody does when they screw
gonna
up.
You're going to get the atlatl season taken away, Clay.
How many people?
I think we should.
Here's the add-on to that. Atlatls work, obviously, because we're here. Folks also used to build fires without a fire starter. And out of all the people that you know, how many people you think can walk right out there in them woods and set them on fire? Without some type
Rick Spicer.
In this room?
No.
Two people, Misty and Rick.
That's right,
Clay.
But of all the people you know.
Very few.
Sorry, okay. Rick, that you got demoted to that level.
That's the deal.
No, I think we're going to hunt with them.
They're doing it.
It's been for several years.
That's their new motto. Missouri, we're doing it.
They're doing it.
Shout out to Missouri.
Shout out to the license plate.
I was just thinking about South. I'm sorry. South Dakota came up, and we love South Dakota and South Dakotans. But they had a slogan that said meth.
Oh yeah,
we're on it.
We're on.
And that's
it.
What I was trying to think. Yeah.
It was an anti-drug. This is for real. There was an anti-drug
marketing campaign
we're
ever.
On it, like meth, they're
meth.
Gonna
like
take
it out. Except for it said meth. We're on it.
It's not a joke.
They didn't run. They didn't have too many focus groups.
I think they were
grateful for
COVID. I think they were like, great, something else to take everyone's attention on, because it was the year before. It was pretty fun.
Mark that time. Take that out.
Yeah.
Just lost all the South Dakota listeners.
We're not nervous. We're just real quick.
Oh, my goodness.
Says the drug task force guy.
I think the idea that history defines us whether that was your main point.
Yeah.
History defines us whether or not we know it.
Yeah.
But just like the fact that we're all standing right here because atlatls work. And I don't even, 5 minutes ago, I didn't even know when one was. History really does define us whether or not we know. That's a pretty big point.
You know what? The conclusion of the series, that's what I love about what we're doing, is that this is not, I didn't plant Devin to say what he said. And I started out with a genuine question. Like, why does any of this matter? Why is it important? And, you know, we could talk about that for an hour, why it's important. I mean, is this just entertainment to understand this stuff? Is it just entertaining? Or is there something more? And, you know, Devin, right at the end, just said, he said, anthropology is powerful stuff. He said, all this stuff is defining us whether we want it to or not.
Yep.
So with or without our knowledge of what happened at Folsom and what these people did, and those things are defining us. And I keep going back to this idea that we're in a time period when human nature and humans, it's like we're looking for a new definition of what it means to be human. And you could take that 1,000 different ways. You have 1,000 different examples. There's no salvation inside of being a hunter. I don't want it to sound like that. There is something that is very defining and very simple and very architectural, meaning that it is a pillar of our humanity that we can't get away from no matter what we do. You can choose to get away from it for some period of time usually. But the fact that we're meat eaters and that we lived by an intimate and skilled connection to the land, that is a primary definer of our humanity that has to, in 2022 and in the future, continue to define what it means to be human. And so by looking back at this stuff and saying these people were just like us, I don't know, it changes it. I meant what I said, in that it puts perspective on my problems. It puts perspective on the challenges that I have inside of my life. Really does. And it just kind of grounds you, moving away from satisfaction and identity inside of some of this temporal, ephemeral stuff. What do you guys think?
Oh, I agree. Absolutely. I have simplified my life over the last 3 years to about, I don't watch the news. You know, what's the old saying? If you watch the news, you're misinformed. If you don't watch the news, you're uninformed. You know, I get majority of the things that are going on from people telling me, hey, I saw this. This is what's going on here and there. I have simplified my life around, what's the old thing I say to you? If it ain't gunfire, it ain't, you know, everything's probably going to be all right. And that's where I tend to lead my family, in that direction of simplifying and getting away from all the distractions and everything that are going on. And we just pretty well concentrate on taking care of each other and our friends and our neighbors and doing the right thing. And you go, but these folks that were making these, that's what they were worried about. Mm-hmm. They were worried about everything that they could wake up in the morning and see. And that was their world. And that was, of course, it may have something to do with why they're not here now, but you know, I may be wrong thinking, but it's right thinking for me.
Why does this matter, Misty?
To me, when we talk about Bear Grease, how I always describe it to people is Bear Grease is not just a podcast that Clay does, but it's a metaphor for how we live our lives. And that is, we hold on to ancient principles and we live our life by ancient principles, but use progressive tools. You know, so there's things that really shape who we are, how we live as a family. I mean, everyone who listens to this podcast should know by now that biblical principles are a major part of that for us, and that shapes who we are. But it doesn't mean that we like hearken back to some good old days that of like, you know, I don't wear prairie dresses from the 1800s, although it's really on trend right now. But you know, I use computers. We are very progressive people in one way. And we're always, and I think that that's what you see inside of some of these tools, is like you see progress, and you see, I would define tools differently than, you know, than an arrowhead. Now, those aren't really tools that I use, but we use progressive tools to accomplish and to live lives that are governed by ancient principles. And I think that anytime you look back at history and you look back at those things, you learn more about
that. You get a data point. Mm-hmm. Dan, what do you think? Why does this matter?
For me, what really helped me through this whole series on the Folsom is going, you go back 10,000 years to people and they were people. Mm-hmm. They had culture. They had sophisticated ways of engaging with one another. They had really complex relationships and lives. And I think that narrative corrects a lot of thinking that, I mean, before I probably didn't think a lot about 10,000 years ago and people, but just the idea that when you go back, being human is a very, very unique thing. Mm-hmm. And then I think looking at today and realizing how, and you've said it before, Clay, how absurdly different our lives are today than the vast majority of all people that have lived, it really does put our lives in perspective. And I think because our lives are so different now, if 10,000 years ago, there was, you know, I'm making this up, two ways to define yourself. One was a Folsom point and one was a Clovis point. Today, there's 10 million ways to define yourself. And the vast majority of them feel, you know, just overly empty. And we just go from one to the other. Mm-hmm. And I think that, to me, it's grounding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rick, why does this matter?
For me, like, as, especially as someone who has kind of a foot in both doors, like, on one hand, I'm a, like, earth skills practitioner, I would. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I sell the most modern technical outdoor equipment made for a living, right? Mm,
yeah, yeah. Rick is part owner in a really cool outdoor store, which you heard on the podcast.
Yeah, I spend money there.
I'm pretty sure I bought this fleece there about 20 years ago.
Yeah. Really? Maybe Rick will give you your money back.
We now get a discount.
No, we're buddies.
No, I think, though, that there's a lot of value for me in that because the rate at which our society is changing is like exponential right now, right? Like things just change faster and faster. And I don't know that there's a way to stop that. And I don't know that the speed at which things are changing, well, I'll just say that I don't think it's good for us. But I think that
as a species,
as a species, I don't think that our brains were necessarily made to handle all of the things that are going on at once right now, the way they are. And so for me, looking back, I would use a lot of the words you folks have already used, you know, grounding, connective, and it feels really good to slow things down and look back at how people would have lived and what they needed to live. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me that we don't need most of the things that we have around us right now.
Yeah.
You know, because they're just things.
Yeah.
What matters are the people that are around us, the relationships we have with those people, and the relationship we have with this earth.
You know, I go back to this idea that these Folsom points in 1,000 years, and we could have picked any style of point. It could have been, there's other styles, but just what we talked about was Folsom. That Folsom point being transferred generationally, we see a stone point because it outlasted the erosive nature of time. But what other values and principles were passed down with that stuff? Because there were fathers teaching sons how to nap stone. I know from being with Rick, it's not a fast process. You're in close proximity. You're talking. I mean, I like to think about it as a kind of a metaphor for just generational continuance and something stayed so stable for so long. I think families want that with their kids, and not that our kids would be just like us. I don't care if my kids are just like me. There are principles and values that I hope my life would impact generations from now of Newcombs, that they would be able to go. Mm-hmm. I'm a product of that.
Yeah.
I'm a product.
Right.
I'm not isolated. I didn't come up with this version of who I am. You know, it's kind of a metaphor to me for generational continuance too. And to look back at stuff like that gives you vision,
some clarity,
and just thoughts of, life is more than just making more money next year than we had this year,
right,
getting a newer car, putting a good Instagram post up, being successful in what you're doing. I mean, like, life is bigger than that. Looking back does give us a sense of we don't need as much stuff as we think we need. And the ridiculousness of this Western world we live in puts incredible value on material stuff that will not outlast the erosive nature of time.
Right.
No.
Right.
But Josh, why is it important?
I'm not a philosopher like Dan is. I think the thing that I draw out of it is looking back at ancient peoples like this makes me identify the things that were produced in their lives that caused our species to continue on.
Mm-hmm.
And really that comes down to relational activity. You know what I mean? Husbands and wives and children and investing and providing and doing those kind of things. And the gratitude that we must have for those things, and not a sense of burden, but really a sense of gratitude that we have the opportunity to build relationships with one another, that we have the ability to invest values inside of our children, because it's easy to get overwhelmed with the crisis and the all the things that are going on inside of the world, that when we stop, when you know, the it feels like the world is moving faster and faster and faster. And in a sense, it is. Mm-hmm. But when we slow down inside of our families and we slow down inside of our minds and we stop reeling and we start thinking through things and we start thinking through consequences of our actions, that I think that that produces a lot of value in our lives and a lot of peace and hope, because I think those are the things that are lacking inside of our society right now, is peace and hope.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's all just fear. And so it makes me stop and think, what can I observe from those people's lives? They worked hard. They were creative. They were strategic. And applying those things inside of my own life with, you know, Christy and I, as we talk about our marriage and raising our kids, what do we need to do to produce the fruit in the future? I think we can glean a lot of those things when we look back historically. And I think it's very thought provoking, you know, looking at the Folsom Peoples, looking at how mm-hmm. they made their points. It provokes a lot of thoughts that can produce a lot of fruit. So I think mm-hmm. it's good.
Josh, I bet you buy your wife candy.
I buy my wife whatever she wants.
Oh, I'm sorry. I had a great time. I genuinely did. We had so much fun.
We did have a
I
great
did
time.
I did mess with him about giving me a hard time about my shot.
It was just when you looking over his shoulder and there's this big red squirrel up in the tree.
You're going to keep doing it. We're just not going to stop. I'm just saying.
Like pointed like way over here. And the squirrel was like over here.
Okay, listen.
A trick shot.
I am not.
Off the wide open.
Or like a ricochet.
Oh, I got you, girl. I got you, girl. Yep.
Fantastic stuff. Fantastic stuff. I could talk about Folsom points for, you know, I've feared that four episodes on Folsom would get old. It didn't to me.
Me either.
I really enjoyed that last episode. It was one of my favorites.
Really? Why was it your favorite?
I think I love the craftsmanship of the listening to things made and talking about, you know, how they would have hafted it. And, you know, in my mind, I'm visualizing all these things. I thought it was a great, it provoked a lot of visual activity inside of my mind. And that's something that I really enjoy.
I heard a lot of people say that they felt like it was their favorite one in the series. But what was cool about it, too, it was such a diverse series, because we started off with George McJunkin and hardly even talked about Folsom, really. It was about George McJunkin, you know. Yeah, super fascinating stuff. And the next, I already foreshadowed what the next episode is going to be about. Yeah, it's not just about duck hunting. Like, don't think that. But it is a very specific issue that has broader applications to wildlife management in this country and the decisions that we make and how we build hunting culture. How's that for foreshadowing, CJ?
You're trying to bring in an addle season for ducks.
Why wouldn't we?
Why not?
Hey, we're here, buddy.
That's some flu.
Hey, you see that spear right there, Rick? Do you see that?
Yeah.
I made that spear with the full intent when I was like 21, the full intent of using it to hunt a deer in Arkansas. And I called the authorities that be. And they were like, you can't hunt a deer. I thought it would just automatically downgrade. Like you can use gun season.
You can't use a bazooka, but you can use an atlatl.
I was like, hey, it's bow season. I can use a spear, right? And the dude laughed me out of the park.
Really? That's unnecessary.
The city park. He was
it's as unnecessary as giggling.
Metaphorically. He metaphorically laughed me out. Right. He didn't laugh at
me. Do you remember his name?
He wasn't rude.
Okay, good.
His name was... No, he was very professional with me, but he was just like, No way. I mean, he treated me like I was a college kid, which I guess he had the right to do.
Adelaide 23.
Missouri's doing it.
Missouri's doing it, y'all.
Hey, we just keep going on and on. I wanted to say this about Missouri. You know, Missouri has a new bear season. Shout out. Missouri is doing it. They just instituted a new bear season. Man, if you do anything in your life, support when new seasons arrive for species.
Absolutely.
They've taken a little bit of flack in that people, there's different things where people are like, you know, anti the new bear season in Missouri, which is ridiculous because
put the petitions aside,
the best thing, Daniel Roop, that could ever happen to you if you were a big game animal is that there would be a season for you in that state. Because where animals have cultural...
It's Dan season.
See, that's why hunting is such a complex story. Where animals have cultural value, their habitat is protected and they are protected. Where an animal has no cultural value, put it out the door, we don't care. And we've got 1,000 examples across this planet where that has happened. You go all over the globe and they don't have as many big game animals as many as we do here in North America because they killed them all. Because they didn't culturally value them through sport hunting. Roll it up and smoke it in your
smoker
pipe.
I was looking for the Native American word for
peace pipe.
Roll it up and smoke it in your peace pipe, man.
More tigers in Texas than there are in India.
Wild.
Yep.
Love
I don't
it.
Know if that's true, but love that it. Sounds great.
All right. Well, great to have everybody. Rick, great to have you. Thanks for coming on. Rick.
Thanks for inviting me. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, man. Hey, check out Rick, Pack Rat Bushcraft. Kiki and the Beard.
Kiki and the Beard.
Brent Reeves.
With an A.
With an A. We all know what that stands for. Daniel Roop.
I'm
Arnold.
Oh,
Dr. Daniel Roop.
Dr. Daniel Roop on Dr. Instagram. Roop. And then Newcomb Farm.
Newcomb Farm.
Yeah,
you got to follow Newcomb Farm.
A very visually appealing Instagram page.
Yeah.
If you want to see some produce and some beautiful
like
farms.
Sometimes you'll see the camera slightly leaning to the left.
Oh, here we go.
Boy, you
just
can't
leave it alone.
You just can't stop, can you?
Oh, it's so great to have you.
You could have done so much better, mister.
I don't even know what to say here.
Have a great Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Hey, if you guys like to cook outdoors, and you oughta, you should check out the Weber Slate Rust Resistant Griddle. So this is a carbon steel cooktop. It's safe for metal tools. It's pre-seasoned with food-safe oils and ready to cook on right out of the box. It's the griddle that stays ready, not rusty. This griddle heats evenly edge to edge, reaching all the way up to 500 degrees. Get fired up for your new Weber Slate rust-resistant griddle.
Maui Nui is on a mission to help balance axis deer populations for the good of our environment, communities, and food systems. On the island of Maui, they've shared over 126,000 pounds of nutrient-dense protein with the Maui community. Secure your spot now, become a snack subscriber, and join in helping to build more resilient food and ecosystems on Maui. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com, that's MauiNuiVenison.com, and use promo code BEAR for 20% off your first order.